This is a continuation of the lecture, Axioms 14 to 32.
Now, when you look at how much you've got to go to get up to 40, it means just that. I mean, it can go up that high. It may be that the human organism actually levels out and has a tolerance band, which is really as good as that. And maybe this curve comes up here like this and then goes up here. And just moves on up into pure theta of some sort. So you're into the field of motion on the other side of the static, which we are considering the point of origin. This time. Therefore, you get your over and under manifestations, both of which are aberrating. Now you understand this? Very, very clear, actually. And you look at it on the face of the tone scale, and you just get your graduated scale. An individual is pretty bad off until he gets to three. He's very bad off till he gets to three. It's hard to conceive how much better off he can get, so carry it at four, from three to four, as a desirable band. But that doesn't mean that four is the lowest band of desirability. It means that lowest band of desirability, which would be within the compass of understanding of Homo sap. He might get frightened at anything above four, and right away would think in his slowed or accelerated state that it's too much motion, too much action, too much harmony, too much something. See? As a consequence, you can talk to people about this little band in here. And that's the tolerance band for an aberree. He can see somebody being excited about some idea like having a new car. He can understand that. It lies in that band. Acquisition of mess, very messy object, automobile. Understand that fine. He can get up to the point where he'll understand somebody going out and taking up a collection for the YMCA. But he starts to slack off right about there. Go any further than that, on a dynamic outward thrust, he starts to get suspicious, and he'll start to fight. And you suddenly tell him, well, you've got a small crew of guys, and you aren't going to get anything for it, but at the same time, you think that there's a lot of things in the human race could be catalyzed, sped up, and that you're seriously thinking of throwing this or that force into action. You think this is a desirable thing. His tenuous grip upon his own organism, the number of times he is stopped and compelled forward against his will, multiply into a quiver of fear. You say, now look, let's get together a little organization, stop this war between the United States and Russia. People look at you and they say, well, that couldn't possibly be done. It's out of their reference of motion. That's all. Actually, the only reason you could stop a war between the United States and Russia, only way you possibly could, is just by making a postulate along about that line. Well, let's get in and stop it. And then apply enough motion to the subject of war and pull back enough motion on the subject of war and treat particularly the emanation points of war, you get a collapse of the subject of war. You've stalled it or speeded it to death. As a subject, can be done. I was always intrigued at the fact that individuals almost always will overlook overselling as one of the highest levels of defeat that you could hand out to a company. Remember Hadakal? I had an idea to hand Hadakal. I was going to hand Hadakal an idea. It's too bad Senator LeBlanc didn't get here. I was going to sell him this idea. I had already looked up an attorney to hand it to him. Very simple idea. Merchandising. He would have liked it, right in his frame of reference. The second he would have used it, he would have collapsed. But he collapsed before he got here. I just wanted to make an experiment out of the thing. I looked at the circuses he was running and that sort of thing, and I said, well, he's gone already into this part of the band. And he's going out, go out quick. Now, I wonder how much faster he can be pushed out. Now he's up for federal taxes and all sorts of things, and the company collapses. And he introduced too much randomity into his operation. Remember a German agent down in Santo Domingo, poor fellow, he was in there spreading around Nazi propaganda, and everybody was very happy and cheerful about reading this Nazi propaganda, and all of a sudden duplicate folders, just exactly like he was issuing, started to appear in his immediate periphery, and they just oversold Nazism just that much. And the Latins got mad at him and killed him. Well, all in the name of glory, I suppose. But there's this over and under proposition of speed. But it depends on what you're addressing the speed to. You can take a person on this band of the tone scale and you can just feed him a couple of more dynes of speed and he'll collapse on you. You take a person over here and you just take off 1/1,000th of a dyne of energy off of him and he'll collapse. He can't run any slower, and this other fellow can't run any faster. And the fellow on this side gets in conflict with the fellow on this side, and they shoot each other to pieces, and you have a government. Now, the point is you don't take a fellow here and make him slow down. Because the reason he is traveling at that speed is he has to maintain that velocity to stay out of his own stops. And the second you say slow down, he'll speed up. He's got to. And there's your reverse character of the tone scale. You know, as people lower and lower in the tone scale, you say be good, they're bad. You say be serious, they laugh. If they think they're telling the truth, they're lying, and vice versa. This is what happens on that lower band. You tell this person over here, who's going too slow, to speed up. And what are you? You are a counter-effort, which is doing just exactly what all the counter-efforts are doing against him, trying to speed him up. And that's the one thing he mustn't do, because the next instant of wherever he's stuck or in how many other places he's stuck contains death or pain. So he can't speed up. So just coaxing him to do so, you might as well get out here and plead with the waves to stop. Because if he's at all sane, he isn't going to listen to you at all. He'd sure better not listen to you. Unless you can give him processing. Now that's something else. You give a person processing, whether he's on this band or this band, he'll just start to slop over into this band. And he won't come back this way, because he'll maintain an optimum motion. He'll probably get up here and explode or something, but that's beside the point. Axiom 22, theta and thought are similar orders of energy. Well, this just says theta, thought, knowledge, theta, facsimiles, and so forth. This is all a similar order of, quote, energy, unquote. The reason I'm using energy through here is so it's comprehensible to people without talking about cause. Actually, theta, thought, and so forth, these are statics. But a thought becomes action the second it gets mixed up with motion, so that you have to have an interplay of understanding on the subject of thought to have any movement in the organism. In other words, here's thought itself, which is static, but it is full of postulates of the physical universe, which are themselves in motion. So the thought appears to be in motion because it contains facsimiles of motion. Now, the organism is capable, being already possessed of many of the forces of the physical universe, to reach out and take these theta facsimiles and lay them down across actual motion and cause that physical universe motion to take form and shape. You see how this is? Thought itself is not in motion, but thought itself can be applied to the physical universe, which then goes into motion. We here could figure out what we are going to be doing 8 months from now, and between now and 8 months from now, and we could figure this all out, and we could actually lay thought all along the time track clear up to 8 months. It's not any trouble. Thought hasn't got any time in it. You can put it up as far forward as you want to. So you lay thought along 8 months. The only thing you have to do is sit back and wait for the time of the mess to catch up with it so these thoughts will go into action. But you notice they won't go into action until time comes along. So the thought is static, and the second that the static, however, can be interposed or impinge upon the physical universe motion, then physical action takes place. And by the way, only then does understanding take place. That's understanding, motion. Now, understanding then is something which is in motion. It has action. The second it is codified into a belief, it is a static. Axiom 23, all thought is concerned with motion. Axiom 24, the establishment of an optimum motion is the basic goal of reason. You can get the business, you walking up to the door, the little kid daydreaming. All of these things are in the direction of doing things with messed. They will be lined up with knocking out things which the organism considers contra-survival, and putting into existence things which the organism considers is pro-survival. And if this is done well, and you juggle the theta facsimiles of the past data which you have well, and use that to manufacture other theta facsimiles in the form of imagination, then you've got all the operation of reason there is, evidently. The odd part of it is, though, that this reason does not normally seem to include anything like extrasensory perception, intuition, clairvoyance, clairaudience, and so on, and yet these things seem to be in existence. Now, that's strange, isn't it? What are these things? Well, they're evidently theta interactions of somehow, but you can take a causative agent, a static such as theta, and you could juggle that thing so many ways that I'm surprised the boys haven't found more than merely clairvoyance, clairaudience, intuition, so forth. It looks like they're playing in the bush league. If Rhine started figuring it out, theta as an all-pervasive, since it has no space, point of causation, and start figuring out what you could do with that, holy cats. Why worry about whether or not clairvoyance exists and so on? Well, theta's probably laying up the track and down the track and all over the place. It's all over the place because it's no place. You should be able to figure out more manifestations for it. For instance, because it's a point, it doesn't have any time or space, there's no reason why you don't get a collision of ideas. Idea originated in one place, same time it's originated in another place. Theta facsimile just congeals, but simultaneously in two places on the face of the earth, but actually in one place. This is very easy to understand. You have Bessemer in England inventing the process of making steel practically the same day that Kelly in, I think it was Kentucky, invented the process of making steel. They're the same processes. We got to rolling on these axioms, and the boys were experimenting down here at the foundation. It's very funny. I would come down and I would say, you know, something or other, something or other, something or other, and they'd say, yes, we've been doing that for 24 hours. And this, however, is traceable to reason. Here are the tools of reason, extrapolation. But you can do some very fascinating things in this field by just looking at the other guy's theta facsimiles. So he's got a flock of theta facsimiles, and you have the ability to look at theta facsimiles. Why can't you see his theta facsimiles, too? Well, that's simple, isn't it? And actually, it is very simple. I had an FBI agent going around in a squirrel track one day. He was at a party, and I was telling fortunes. Actually, it's very easy to tell fortunes. All you do is get a set of fortune-telling cards, and you just read off to the person whose fortune you're telling exactly the way you deal off fortunes. That's all. I mean, it's all according to the book. There's a book on the subject, so you deal them all off. Of course, you don't want to spook the individual, because by the time you've told anybody's fortune over a short period of time, let's say you're sitting in front of me for about 20 minutes dealing these cards and saying, and there's a dark-haired man going to come into your life, and I see here that you're going on a trip. And he says, it's to my uncle's house out on a farm. And all you have to say, of course, is, I see wide, spacious countryside. And he says, oh, yes, my uncle's house. And you say, thank you. And you just read these high generalities, high-level generalities. Deal them off. This fellow'll spark up. He's concentrating on what you're concentrating on. And at the end of 20 minutes, you can't keep on looking at the cards and telling age, name, serial number, rifle number, and the rest of it. You ought to quit. Because you've invited this person's interest to enormous extent. His interest is just pouring at you. And if you can't read what's in the interest, you ought to quit. It's just exactly as if you as an individual had interchanged the ability with him to read theta facsimiles, that's all. And as a matter of fact, you look into the basic construction of the brain that I'll cover in the second half of this evening's talk, and I think you will see exactly why this is so simple. There's nothing much to it. As a matter of fact, you can lay out the rules by which you make it possible to read somebody else's mind. You can actually look at their, you can look at them, and you can say, well, you recently were out on a farm, you were trying to buy this farm, and it had a nice big back pasture, and there were some horses down in the corner of the field, but there was a train that went by, and your wife didn't like the train. This person starts doing this. This FBI agent in Washington got into this because he stood back and watched other people's fortunes being told over, over, and over. And he finally got to the point where he had to have his fortune told. And so I told his fortune. And then, of course, he was perfectly willing to extrapolate that because you could read a theta facsimile that he already had. I mean, you just get this impression that this was the kind of life the fellow was reading. So you just tell him about it, that's all. Nothing very fancy. Just reading present time stuff. And you let him extrapolate the future for himself. And you can read what he's extrapolating the future on. And then you tell him this. It's simple. And the next time I saw him, he was so bad off on this subject that I helped him out. I read his fortune face down for him without looking at the cards, and then called off all the cards and read it perfectly without missing a single lick through a whole deck of cards. Never looked at them. Handed them to him and showed him that it was a deck of readers. They were marked cards. This was well within his frame of understanding, and after that he was happy. Never occurred to him that this trick had nothing whatsoever to do with the trick which was being pulled off the former Sunday. He just invalidated both of them. Of course, that man never thought in identities, I'm sure of that. Now, Axiom 25, the basic purpose of reason is the calculation or estimation of effort. It's already mentioned. When you find that effort is the middle of all of this, it's motion, force with direction, that's all. And you as a computing machine could keep computing these efforts. You have to make innumerable computations, but you're so used to making them that you don't quite realize you're doing so. And that's why when you go out and ask a golfer how he hits the ball to get those beautiful fairway long drives, you know, he jolts because all of a sudden you have pried into his automatic effort postulator, you see. And it's all figured out and postulated, and it's in beautiful condition. He hasn't examined it for years, and it's in an automatic response category. It's all laid aside on the shelf, and you just tell him, hey, take a look at that. And the fellow says, sees nothing wrong with taking a look at it. And the second he takes a look at it, he just throws a new scanner beam into it, more or less, and so to speak, and you've got all of a sudden his theta facsimiles are all stirred up on the subject, and he doesn't know whether this hand goes on this side or whether he's supposed to put the golf ball in his bag or the hole. You can actually throw a person this way if they are to any degree concentrated unknowingly upon a lot of counter efforts. You couldn't do this to an individual who was not opposing invisible counter efforts, because You have asked this man to shift his attention, and his attention is in balance to take care of the physical universe around him. And the second that you take off one beam, it actually isn't so much that it messes up theta facsimiles as it lets a counter effort in on him. You could do the same trick by asking him to pay attention to his left foot, pay attention to his right foot. And the next thing you know, why, he's got a somatic or something. Then he goes out, he's out of coordination. Then you infer that the reason he's out of coordination is because you have asked him the question of how he does it. He gets a new data on this because he's already upset. He agrees with you. Done for. This is the way to handle salesmen that are playing golf with you, but if you're a salesman, this is not the way to handle the person you're playing golf with. Thought is accomplished by theta facsimiles of physical universe entities or actions. What a theta facsimile is a still picture which is in motion without wavelength, which exists everywhere but nowhere, on a film which has never been manufactured, which has never come into existence. Really a fascinating gimmick, this theta facsimile. Theta facsimile is a descriptive statement of a phenomenon. The phenomenon demonstrably exists. There is a theta facsimile. It evidently strays in from someplace. Where they're filed, you don't know, because you keep looking in space and time, and theta isn't in space and time. So they're not filed in space and time. And therefore, it kind of looks like they don't exist, but people think. The thing is full of paradoxes, but what else is a static but full of paradoxes? Since a static is all motions resolved into no motions from which all motions are possible, that's a static. In the science of physics, a true static does not exist. You can look over physics, you won't find a true static. In Dianetics, we have a true static. Man has suddenly decided to brave all of this yak about having to walk wide from delusions, illusions, and so forth, and just says, all right, so it's zero. So out of this answer of zero, we're getting an enormous number of answers. Well, that's fine. These are useful answers. People are getting, well, they feel better, and so forth. Well, that's zero, and that's a static. Well, that would be a true static, even in physics. But physics doesn't have a true static. Every static they have postulates motion, whereas this static can exist without any motion. Now, a theta facsimile could best be imagined, however, as having time and space, since every theta facsimile contains a facsimile of time and space as well as motion and entities. It's a full picture. What it's impinged upon, we do not know, but what it looks like, we certainly know, if we can remember anything. It's by a thought facsimile. However it's stored, it doesn't matter. You can get these things back. They are filed in relationship to time because they all contain time in them. A theta facsimile, you take a picture of something which includes time, and it now appears to include time, but it doesn't include any time. Otherwise, you could never go back on the time track, but you get the feeling that you can go back on the time track, so it includes the picture of time which you use. Now, that's a theta facsimile. Don't run off the rails as far as I have from time to time when I've been pushed by biology and the rest of the boys to saying this stuff is in the cells. It's not in the cells. The cells aren't that big. A lot of other reasons why it isn't in the cell. And one of the best reasons in the cell, if you keep your eyes open, you can see a theta facsimile causing distortion of the body without a muscular response, which is a very fascinating thing. And that's why this theory of theta facsimile is theories why an individual can go down the time track, come back up, be tired out, you run him through another incident, and he's fresh. It's quite remarkable. I've taken almost caused a doctor to blow his stack on several occasions just by taking Preclear down the time track, turning his temperature on to 101, making him look haggard, old, exhausted, worn, torn to pieces, beaten up, red, measles spots, just fix him up just wonderfully. And the doctor says he's sick. You say that's fine. All right, now let's run through this incident four or five more times. Now let's run through several pleasure moments as we come on up to present time. And no spots, normal temperature, so forth. Boom! Theta facsimile evidently operates on the level of atomic molecular activity. A theta facsimile evidently can take atomic molecular particles and align them or misalign them or form them or reform them. But the particle has to be there for the theta facsimile to operate on. If it isn't there, then the theta facsimile will not exhaust across it. And if you're really running out an n-gram full tilt with a pre-flare, you'd certainly better put enough stuff in the body to get aligned with the n-gram. You just put in enough random odds and ends. And it's very happy. I mean, the theta facsimile can then twist this all it wants to, and you get boil off, and the individual can go ahead with it. Whereas the theta facsimile hits him when he doesn't have enough to move around, and it'll start throwing out of alignment his paucity of materiel in his system. And he gets pretty bad off. A psychotical spin. There is a borderline there where he doesn't have enough. He actually doesn't have enough atoms and molecules for a theta facsimile to work on. So the theta facsimile moves across these, takes the existing molecules, throws them all out of alignment, and your psychotic spins. Now you start feeding him a lot of protein and vitamins and minerals and so forth and stuff him full, and all of a sudden he stops spinning. Theta facsimile can twist those around now if you've really got one in tough. And it's fascinating that the theta facsimile does not have size. This would follow, of course, because it doesn't exist in space and time, but it doesn't have size. Any of you ever run a sperm sequence? Any one of you have ever run, it doesn't have any energy in it either. But it has all the energy there is in it. The sperm sequence, you ever see anybody lying on the couch with the sperm sequence and see his feet start to go like this in an impossible motion? He says, "What am I doing?" The energy which would have generated that, you see, was of the magnitude necessary to wiggle the tail of something which is only visible in a microscope. And yet you've got this fellow wiggling his whole body. You see, there's a central trigger system in the mind, and it lines everything, and it makes all the body work this way all the way down to its extremities. And therefore, you only need the stimulus of this little trigger, and therefore it can be stored as an energy. Well, that's something like saying, well, it's God's fault. Because you get up to the point of this little trigger, and you've got to have a theta facsimile manipulating the trigger. You see? Horrible. But here you start running somebody through a prenatal, and he says, "I don't know why it is, but I've got to curl up." And he promptly curls up. And boy, they really curl up tight. Try and get one to straighten out when he's in the middle of it. He's in the grip of something which is catalyzing his own energy levels. It's a wonderful piece of stuff, a theta facsimile. It has motion in it, but it doesn't exist. It has wavelength, but no weight. It doesn't have wavelength because it hasn't got any. Boy, it's truly a static, which can take the form of any motion, but which is not the motion, although it can take its form. Therefore, I'm telling you this so that you can tell a preclear this every once in a while, and you can explain it to him. You can even demonstrate it to him, make him run down the track and make him change a piece of mist while he's back there. You say, "Well, that's fine while you go back on the time track." You go back on the time track, you're driving your car in my driveway now. Back it out again and park it in front of the house and come up to present time. Now you get him up to present time and you say, "Still in the driveway." And he said, "Yes, so it is. Therefore, you must have been running through a series of pictures of running it in." He says, "Of course I was." He says, "Well, how come those pictures are in present time when the mist isn't in present time? There couldn't have been any time in those pictures then, couldn't there? But there must have been time in the pictures because you went back on time." And you can say, "Now, you see, this stuff isn't inside your body, and it really isn't inside your head. Everybody's been telling you all your life it's inside your head. Well, it couldn't possibly be. It's exterior someplace, and all you've got to do is throw it all away, and you're well. $25, please." All right. We're on axiom Calculation or estimation of effort. Thought is accomplished with theta facsimiles of physical universe entities or actions. Axiom 27, theta is satisfied only with harmonious action or optimum motion, and rejection destroys action or motion above or below its tolerance band. Very simple. We've been covering that in other forms. Just covered it. The mind is concerned wholly with an estimation of effort. Just a corollary. Definition. Mind is the theta command post of any organism or organisms. That's a slippy one. You get out of that awful easy when you say that. Axiom 29. The basic errors of reasons are failure to differentiate amongst matter, energy, space, and time. That axiom might possibly be shifted to read the basic error of reason is failure to estimate effort. And you've got the same thing, because a failure to differentiate is a failure to estimate. Very simple. Axiom 30, rightness is proper calculation of effort. Wrongness is always miscalculation of effort. Axiom 32, theta can exert itself directly extensionally. Now, let me cover that for a moment, because we will need this in the second part of the talk. Theta can say, there can be this postulate out of the old postulates, I'm going to lift my hand, and the fellow lifts his hand. Or he can say, in 2 minutes or in 2 seconds, I'm going to lift my hand. One and two. Or it can say, sometime in the future, I'm going to lift my hand. Now that is extrapolating action against time. I can do the same thing with any motion or structure. It says, sometime in the future, I'm going to build a new table. Now, the organism observes that when it postulates a physical action now, action takes place. And it's actually handling an organism action outside the command post, so it says this can continue to exist. So it will accept and deliver extensional action commands. It will accept symbolism of action. It will tell another organism to move, and that other organism will move. And because the organism, other organism tells it to move, it will move. But all of these things are based upon a former action. An action had to exist before theta can then pretend to extend an action. And in this wise, you get the individual saying, well, I can extend this thought actually to conquer mist, just to extend the thought itself in its pure state. I don't have to figure out anything about the thought. I don't have to reason or calculate in other ways. In other words, I just extend a pure thought toward some portion of the physical universe and it changes. Matter, energy, space, or time. It'll change if I do that. It says this. Obviously, it's an extrapolation which is possible from observing that when one says to his hand to move, his hand moves. Then he says, there isn't any reason why I have to be hooked up to this thing. Why can't I just take pure theta and look at something and say, boom, and it'll move? Why can't I do that? Faith will move mountains. Faith is a static of pure theta. Why can't we direct this? I do not know that we can or cannot. I merely know that it is extrapolatable. The body figures out this can happen. So, it gets so confident about this. It gets so cocky about this. It says, I'm going to move my hand. Bing, hand moves. So it says, it has a dog named Bowser. And it says, Bowser, lie down. That's interesting. There's no great energy here in the throat. Bowser, lie down. Bah! Bowser lies down. Guy really starts to feel pretty good. He's really causing motion just with his voice. That's one of the most beautiful tricks a man has, causing motion with his voice. Thinks about emotion, expresses it in some way, bong. But basic animals do the same thing, too. An orangutan swings out of the trees. Here's a bunch of little monkeys running by, and the orangutan says, "Roar!" And all the monkeys go, zing. He causes motion. Or an owl hovers over a mouse runway and screams most hideously, and the mice all congeal and then scamper. The owl starts or stops motion. And if the owl comes down and screams loud enough over the top of a rabbit, the rabbit will stop running and the owl can pick him up. He's causing, then, by a symbolical action, symbolizing an action, he causes the action to take place. That's very, very neat. That's language. You codify something, the action takes place. It's just hocus pocus. That's all there is to it. The body has experienced the fact that it can postulate it now and it can postulate it in the future, so therefore, why can't it postulate it extensionally and does? And because it can do this, it knows that other things can do this. And when it becomes convinced that others can do this, it becomes initially convinced on this order, by the way. Little Willie runs in and he says, Mama, can I have, shut up. And he says, look at that, her voice stopping. He does not know that 2 years before, when he was smaller, every time he started to run into the house with muddy feet or something like that, he got, bow, bow, you know, good child care. And what he's running into is the bow, bow. And now he looks like he's running into words. He thinks then that words stop him. And they don't. Words don't stop him, but the physical action did. Force can be postulated then by theta, particularly, and I'm afraid on lower levels of tone scale, only when the entity receiving the force or receiving the postulate of some other theta entity has first been handled by physical universe force. Physical universe force handles the organism, then it can thereafter be handled by a symbolism of that physical universe force. And if you take the language of animals apart, you will find out that animals frighten each other by approximations of animals that eat them. All sorts of various symbolizations and camouflages and mock-ups take place in the animal kingdom on this line. In man, we have the beautiful extrapolation of language. It's really a very nice magical trick. But here is extensional force. Here exists force with the clatter of the ashtray. It won't work on tables, unfortunately, but let's say this is an organism, dog, and we say, all we've got to do after a while is, he gets the blow. Because the counter effort is still there. Theta does not move. The counter effort is still paused there. So if you just want the counter effort to be active, you just give some symbol inside the counter effort, or some actual content of the counter effort, which is a sound, and you'll get action. Because you start to let loose the counter effort, and the organism will dodge the existing counter effort. Theta-wise, the counter effort is still in existence. See? Very simple. That is language. The organism, however, has so many, 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 many generations old, has survived through so very much in the way of experience. Its genetic endowment's very heavy. A lot of endowment it has of information in the past in force terms. Therefore, individuals can use these old forces to bring about new actions on the part of organisms in their vicinity through this theta mechanism. That is language, and that is theta extending itself. It says move without pushing, and it gets motion. They capitalize on this by magicians. They stand on the stage, and they have a hat, and they say, hocus pocus, abracadabra. By the way, those things are beautifully old. And I talked to a stage magician one day, and I asked him a few basic questions about real magic. And this guy was a good magician, and he was just going, huh? He didn't know what the score was. He didn't know where he'd gotten his wand, or he didn't know why he used a hat. He didn't know why he had a rabbit. He didn't know the basic laws of magic, nothing of the sort. He was just going on creating illusions. The whole field of magic degenerated. It was a secret cult once. It was hiding a lot of axioms about the physical universe. Amongst those axioms was cause and effect, but do not become the effect of your own cause. The people become awed by your postulation of a cause and their observation of an effect, which apparently is not accomplished by physical means. If you separate physical means out as the intermediate step, everybody is overawed and amazed. They are watching what, in essence, is the operation of God. Static, without motion, causes effect. And so they prey upon this. And so it's a wonderful bit of business. The symbolisms contained in magic are all wrapped around this. This material, by the way, has been coming down the time track now for about 2,000 years. It's very, very old. And before we get too much older, let's take a break.